Welcome to another sermon podcast from Central Presbyterian Church in Atlanta, Georgia. This episode will feature a sermon delivered by the Reverend Shannon J. Kirshner. The sermon is based on scripture from Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 34, and Mark chapter 13, verses 1 through 8, and 28 through 44. Central Sunday morning service for the 17th of March, 2024, the fifth Sunday of Lent, was streamed to our website, our Facebook page, and our YouTube channel. A complete video or sermon audio replay of this service may be found on cpcatlanta.org. Select the upper right menu, and then Sermons Under Worship.
Thank you, Kathy. We continue our journey through Mark. We're now in the 13th chapter, the first 8 verses, and then moving to verse 28 through verse 44. Again, listen for God's living word. As Jesus came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be? And what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs." Then to 28. "From the fig tree learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come. It's like a man going on a journey when he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. Therefore, keep awake. For you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or at cockcrow, or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake." Holy wisdom, holy word, thanks be to God. We left Jesus last week as he sat opposite the treasury in the temple. He had been watching the way that people put in their money. Many of those with great abundance contributed generously, but some of them also made quite a show about it. Since coins with larger amounts were also quite heavy, those giving them literally made a racket, especially as they threw them into the collection with a flourish. But then, do you remember the widow? The one who gave the coins worth little monetary value, coins so light you could hardly hear them land when she dropped them in there with the others. And she just gave them. No counting, no flourish. She simply made her offering before blending into the background again. Yet as we heard last Sunday, even though no one else noticed her, Jesus did. And he called on the disciples to notice her too. He was struck by her willingness to give wholly of herself, holding nothing back, taking the risk to give all she had in hopes that with her participation, God would indeed transform the world. Furthermore, it's possible Jesus also saw himself in that widow. He too was on his way to give wholly of himself, holding nothing back, trusting that taking the ultimate risk that with his life, out of the trust that with his complete participation, God was indeed transforming the world, even through his suffering and death. "Watch her," Jesus had told the disciples. "She's the one from whom you will learn." That brings us to today as we watch the whole group walk outside. And one disciple looks around and catches his breath, and he seems to forget all that Jesus had just taught him. Teacher, do you see the size of this place? It is so big. God must really be doing something here. It's as if he once again looked right past the widow and could only see those with the heavy coins making such a racket. Surely his reaction caused Jesus to feel even just a little impatient. After all, the teachable moment with the widow had not been the only time he had tried to adjust his disciples' vision. He did it every single day. He desired to give them a fuller perspective, a holy perspective, a new vision about what and who counts in God's eyes. For one thing, we learn about God throughout the whole witness of Scripture, from Genesis to Revelation, is that God always pays particular attention to those left out, to those the world does not value, to those whose stories are ignored, to those who inhabit the margins of importance, to those, as we say in our brief statement of faith, whose voices have been way too long silenced. And because God pays particular attention to them, well, then it's our work of disciples as well. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Yet day after day, regardless of how many times Jesus made the same point, the disciples kept forgetting their lessons, misplacing their notes, and regularly becoming swept up in the cultural tidal wave that we all know as well. A cultural milieu that claims that bigger is better. The powerful will inherit the earth. Net worth equals self-worth. Jesus and the disciples had just left the widow, but they had already forgotten the difference between their vision and God's vision about what matters now, and what will matter in the end. Surely, surely their lack of consistency made Jesus feel impatient. After all, it was his focus on that difference of vision, his focus on all who matter to God, that was getting him in so much trouble with those in power for whom constricted vision worked best. It's why he knew his days were numbered. Jesus was in Jerusalem, about to be arrested. Could those disciples not stick with him even just for a few moments? Thus, Jesus chose to use a different teaching method to get their attention. He launched into this apocalyptic diatribe. In Mark's gospel, this is the first time he speaks of such things: the destruction of buildings, the violence of war, the tragedy of earthquakes and famine, the fear that would arise. Yet even though those dire images sounded to those disciples like warnings about the end of all things, Jesus actually spoke about them as birth pangs. They were symbolic of the labor pains that creation would endure as God birthed the new world, the fully transformed world, the redeemed world into their being. And then, after demanding their attention with such vivid imagery, he moved quickly to the image of the fig tree. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near, at the very gates. Now, while Jesus' apocalyptic language feels as stark to me as it must have for those first disciples, his example of the budding fig tree is what's captured my imagination this year. As you know, this is my first spring here with you, after living through 9 winters in Chicago. And typically in Chicago, around this exact time of year, mid-March, you would often catch me looking anxiously outside my office window at the trees, hoping beyond hope to see anything, something that looked like a bud, anything, something that would be a promise to me, that would reassure me that the cold gray days were coming finally to a seasonal end. So you can imagine my surprise when I looked out my home window in the middle of last month, February, and saw the trees already budding. It took me a moment to trust what my eyes were actually seeing, and now, oh my goodness, we see flowers and leaves and so much pollen. So much pollen. Yet still those fresh buds, especially in the month of February, were so lovely to see. They were tangible signs that winter was almost done, small promises that spring was on its way, tiny sermons of hope, tiny proclamations of new life. A friend of mine up north recently reflected that since spring seems to be often reluctant to show up where she lives, she too has been much more aware of the buds that are starting to appear. But even as their arrival delights her, she also worries that if they get another snow or frost, those buds might not be able to recover. The realization of this fragility is why Jesus' use in this passage of the adverb tender has struck her. There is a tenderness to the beginning of spring that I never used to notice, she told me. First, the snow melts away, revealing all the gravel and the trash and the lost gloves. But once the snow is gone, for a while, and I remember this clearly, everything just looks stark, very bare. For a while, the entire landscape appears brittle and fragile as it waits for new life to finally break through. But not just the landscape, she reflected. People, too, seem more fragile, perhaps more brittle than normal around this time of year. Folks up here are weary of the cold, weary of the gray. Nerves and relationships and resources are stretched thin right up to the edge of breaking. And while our spring is drastically different than hers, given all the news of our world, I wonder if many of us feel a little like that fig tree branch, tender and vulnerable. We wonder if things can hold, if the new baby buds of promise and hope appearing on the branch will be strong enough to weather another storm, if our democracy is strong enough to weather another election, if our city is strong enough to figure out how to weather the trial that will take place right behind us. This year, even though we're still now 4 years out from the beginning of the pandemic shutdown, it still feels like we continue to live in this tender and vulnerable season, this liminal time where we're almost standing on tiptoe, watching and wondering, when will the time of blooming and newness come? And can everything hold until it arrives? Almost 10 years ago now, at a Next Church national gathering, Diana Butler Bass, who's a sociologist of religion, offered an insight that intersects with Jesus' teaching in our passage for today. It is the one I offer to those of you who are able to attend our all-church retreat in Montreat last September. Maybe I can jog your memory. In her keynote, she talked about the challenges facing the institutional church and the possibilities of transformation, and she used Otto Scharmer's Theory U project. Quick explanation. The shape of the letter U allows one to understand the corporate shift from a crisis in understanding to a new understanding and transformation. It's a movement that follows the shape of the U. So the crisis happens, the experience at the top left of the U shape, and then you move through the lower and deeper place of corporate awareness of both the crisis and the new possibility, and that's this cradle of the U shape. And if you can make it through that, you keep moving towards transformation, new transformation represented by the top right of the U-shape. Bass used this image to illustrate where we are as a church in this always changing, always shifting, always chaotic culture. And as she explained the movement, Bass pointed out that at the bottom, the cradle, it's the thinnest place of the entire journey. It's the place where discerning new vision of what could be is very possible and acceptable, but it's also most fragile. Jesus might say it's the most tender of times, the time in between what has been and what will be. And Bass believes that at this moment in history, this is the space that the church inhabits. We are currently living in a very thin, very fragile place. We're starting to catch new visions of who the church can be as Christ's body in the world, but we're also needing to be incredibly attentive to both our world and to each other so that this moment of possible transformation does not break, taking all of us years to recover. To use Jesus' image, we are watching the buds of new life in the church begin to sprout, while at the same time, We hope that if another snow or freeze happens to occur, the buds are strong enough to weather it. And even though that presentation was almost a decade ago, I still agree with Bass about her assessment of the space the church is currently occupying, especially in the wake of COVID. As I did at the retreat, I would argue we are occupying that space here at Central, too. We've weathered years of difficult transition. We've weathered families finding homes in other church communities. We are still weathering a downtown that's trying to find its footing for more safety and vibrancy. And yet, as I alluded to earlier, this moment of inhabiting this thin, rather fragile, certainly vulnerable space is not just confined to the church. Rather, when we pay attention to the other buds beginning to sprout on the branches of our history, we see this fragile, tender moment all around us, particularly in our national life. We are living in yet another moment where something new, maybe even something beautiful and transformative, could blossom in and through us as a national family. Or we're living in a moment where we could break, taking us years to recover. I was at a conference a couple of weeks ago here in Atlanta that was hosted by the Presbyterian Foundation, and there were 35 of us pastor people from all around the country. And one of the topics about which we spoke was the absolute complete dread of having to preach and pastor through yet another very contentious and polarizing election season. Many of us still have the battle wounds from 2016 and from 2020, and none of us is ready to do that again. There was this palpable sense in the room that the buds of our ministry, ready to blossom, might not be strong enough to weather another winter storm of meanness, of devolved public discourse, of binary, you're either with us or you're the enemy orientation. One of our speakers, however, spoke into our exhausted tension. He told us how a large United Methodist church in Kansas City handles election seasons these days. And it's not copywritten, so we might want to think about it. I checked. Apparently, they always decide to have their own campaign at the same time and pick a theme. So 4 years ago in 2020, the theme was Love Your Neighbor. The church would print thousands of campaign-like signs with that slogan on it and pass them out to church members. And the instructions were that whenever you saw a public space where political campaign signs were sprouting, you would place your tender bud of Love Your Neighbor right in their midst. The church leadership's hope was that the vulnerable and fragile promise of love your neighbor might pollinate a bit of goodness and tenderness in the hearts of those who noticed. It might prompt people to really see each other, even in the midst of such acidic divisiveness. This campaign within the campaign was also intended to be a larger countercultural movement. They hoped that the Love Your Neighbor signs might pointedly call everyone who saw them to account about to whom they were listening. On whom did their eyes rest? Were they looking out for the widow anymore? Or only those whose loud coins were making a racket? The church's campaign within a campaign prompted questions that were authentic and painful and true all at the same time. They are the kinds of questions that can be asked when one is living at the bottom of the U. The kinds of questions that can be asked as the fig tree starts to sprout its leaves. The kinds of questions that can be asked that Jesus might ask as he continually tries to redirect our attention to those who do not normally have the microphone given to them to tell their story. They are, do you see that widow? Kinds of questions. They are the kinds of questions that have the possibility of bringing forth new blossoms in our city and in our country during this very fragile, thinly stretched time. But questions, if ignored, could just break us, taking us years to recover. These are tender times in which we're living these days, vulnerable and fragile, during which we're having to again decide who do we want to be as a country, Who do we want to be as a church? Who do we want to be as those who try to follow Jesus? Like those first disciples, Jesus is still asking us who we are watching, to whom are we paying attention? Are we still awake? He's wondering if we are noticing the buds of transformation and new life beginning to emerge on the tender branch. And if so, are we willing to do whatever we can to help them survive until spring finally arrives? The widow was, Jesus was and is, the disciples wanted to be. What about us? Amen.
We are glad you joined us for this podcast from Central Presbyterian Church. Central is a welcoming congregation of the Presbyterian Church USA located in downtown Atlanta across from the state capitol. For more information about the life, work, and ministries, please visit our website at cpcatlanta.org. We also invite you to join us for worship and Sunday school and experience this exciting and diverse body of believers who seek to be bearers of God's justice in the world. Thanks again for listening.